here, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Happy Friday, friends. Good to be here with you. And we had a fun week. The highlight of my week, I guess, in doing show prep and preparing for today, was watching the two Democratic Party debates taking place in Detroit. CNN produced both of them. Again, it's a big group, so they've got to split these clowns up into two evenings. And I have to tell you, everybody is asking me who won. Sam, who do you think is the guy or gal that took this and made away with a trophy, with the top prize? And I wish I could tell you. That's the God's honest truth here. I think they all lost. No one I know that is a Democrat, no one that I know that is, and I've talked to quite a few that is following this closely and you know, dislikes Trump and is eager to see the party coalesce behind a candidate. No one has told me that there is a person that they are watching that they just adore. And that's the most important thing here, because okay, let's go back 4 years. Let's do that, Robbie. We'll go back 4 years, and there were candidates. So Trump entered the race with 1%. But he, right from the get-go, had a passionate following. And let's not just look at the Republican side. Let's look at the Democratic side, because at the time, right, Hillary was the anointed successor of Barack Obama. And all the smart people in the room said, oh, it would be Hillary, it would be Hillary. But there was a Bernie Sanders in the mix. And Bernie Sanders was the one who really sucked all the air out of the room and was, beyond any doubt, the people's favorite. And so I don't see any of that here. I don't see any kind of excitement. And I have, by the way, this isn't just my gut. And it's not just the result of me speaking to a handful of people that I trust and listen to, even though we may disagree politically. I will submit to you, I know why I'm right. And I can't always do this, but I have the data to back it up. Now, you're probably thinking, what the hell is he going to say here? But I'm going to rest my case on Google and looking at search trends. Now, you understand the way search engines work. They record the type of searches that we make, you and I, all of us collectively together. And provided that Google openly shares this information and doesn't, tinker with it to advance some particular cause, I think this data here that they presented is actually fairly accurate. Somebody went through and looked at Google searches for the first debate, before and after the debate. So this would have been on Tuesday night. And they went by candidate name. So if you put in Bernie Sanders, you know, it would would come up. And I'm looking at this map. I would say Bernie had about 65% of the states, it looks like. I'm looking at a map based on color. The runner up would have been Elizabeth Warren. So what that tells me, right, that just based on that. So between Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, they've got pretty much the whole country in terms of searches before the debate. So it tells me that the people that are looking at this debate, the folks that are, what is going to happen here, right? The party faithful. They are looking at Bernie or Elizabeth. Now, that makes sense, right? Because Bernie got screwed last time around. And so I think his people are eager and hot on the trail, figure out what's happening now and are watching him closely. Although I believe strongly that a lot of the steam has left the Bernie train. The wind is not in the sails of the USS Lenin Sanders. But I will say this. The most interesting data is not what happened before the event, but afterwards. And can I ask you, who do you think was the most searched for candidate literally in every state but one after the first debate? Well, yeah, it's that Williamson cat. Did you hear, you know who this is? She's the self-help author, and her name's Marianne Williamson. Here, I want to tell you why, because, yeah, I understand that people Google the kook factor. I get that. They Google the person that they think is standing out, but do we have that clip of what, this was her, this was the line that, in my opinion, stole the show, and I'll give it to you, just a quick clip. She got asked a question about Flint, and listen to how she pivots. And literally, Williamson picks a fight with every person on stage, but in a very subtle way. Listen to this.
I lived in Grosse Pointe. What happened in Flint would not have happened in Grosse Pointe. This is part of the dark underbelly of American society. The racism, the bigotry, and the entire conversation that we're having here tonight, if you think any of this wonkiness is going to deal with this dark psychic force of the collectivized hatred that this president is bringing up in this country, then I'm afraid that the Democrats are going to see some very dark days.
Okay, so I'm going to, if it wasn't exactly clear, here's what she said. She gets asked about Flint and the water crisis. What would you do? She says, I grew up in Grosse Pointe. Now, the difference, I think the point she's trying to make is that Grosse Pointe is more of a white community, while Flint is more of an African-American community. And it, you know, and her point is, well, Flint has bad water because of racism. Of course, this is idiotic. It's stupid. It's patently false. But what people are craving, the reason Donald Trump won in 2016 was because of his authenticity. The reason we have a fractured field, the reason that the Democratic debate was unwatchable, and the reason that I and Mrs. Sam Nation were sitting on the couch and just uncomfortable with how bad it was, evaluating strictly on the basis of political theater and watchability, is because every one of those candidates up there, I would submit to you, with the exception of Williamson and Sanders, are phonies. They're just phonies. And I'll tell you what, Bernie's a phony. We know that too, because right. He's made a ton of money, and has he paid any more taxes than he's had to? Has he given money to charity? Has he helped the poor from his own pocket? Of course not. But they're all phonies. Spartacus is a phony. Kristen Gillibrand is a total phony. Come on. First thing they ask her. Did you catch this, by the way? They ask Kristen. They say, Senator, you know, what would you do on the first, you know, on the first day in the White House? And this is after she had talked about, you know, sexism and women's rights and all this stuff. And she says, oh, I would Lysol. I'd disinfect the Oval Office. So she's a feminist, but then she wants, her first act as president would be to clean the White House. Bizarre. I'm telling you, they're phonies. All of them are phonies, and people are over it. We are over it. People on the right, people on the left. This is you want something we all agree on as a country? We want to get real. The idea of listening to Kamala Harris, you know, recite well-versed lines, it's just nobody gives a crap. And so along comes Marianne Williamson, who I don't think has a snowball's chance in hell of ever getting the nomination in the end, because she's a nut. I just don't see her having organizational ability. But people are fascinated by it. They're interested in it. And not because she's nutty, but because she's saying things. And I'll now get to the authenticity of this piece. So she talks about Flint. She talks about She grew up in Grosse Pointe, you know, so yeah, we had good water because we weren't racist against white people. And then, but then this is the line. If you think any of this wonkiness is going to deal with the dark psychic force of the collectivized hatred that this president is bringing up in this country, then I'm afraid that the Democrats are going to see some very dark days. Now, she's right in the outcome. She's not right in the reason necessarily for the subject of the reason, but she gets it. And people on the left, our friends on the left, get it too. They understand that you can be up there and you can talk about GDP figures. Eyes glaze over. Why is Trump Thursday? Last night, he had a tremendous rally in Cincinnati. What's his formula? His formula is not showing graphs. His formula is not getting into the weeds of policy. And all of these candidates up there have binders and binders full of women. Just kidding, not Mitt Romney. They have all this information about the economy and policy positions and everything. And then along, you know, comes a candidate like Trump and shoots from the hip, from the gut. And it's tremendously effective because it sells. And it sells because it feels like you and I, it feels like we're having a conversation with him. He's talking to us, but not at us. Or above us. And that's what this debate was. Now, also, I will tell you, you think, right, you got these politicians up on stage. Really, this debate was all about CNN. CNN, they always make it about them. So it was very self-promotional. And Don Lemon in particular, high-level expert, enterprising journalist that he is. Robbie's got a little montage. I'll play it for you here, and so you understand. And by the way, compare it to the nuance of the way the quote-unquote nut job Marianne Williamson addressed racism, addressed all of this in such a pithy, quick statement, right, when she says it's going to deal with the dark psychic force of collectivized hatred that this president is bringing up in this country. It's a very subtle line. It's nicely said. I disagree, but nicely put. Here is Don Lemon. Supposedly, this guy gets paid to communicate. He is a paid commentator, journalist, show presenter on CNN. And this is a series of clips that are so obvious, first of all, in their lack of any kind of impartiality. But they're also so stupid. This is so dumb. Listen.
Congressman O'Rourke, President Trump is pursuing a re-election strategy based in part on racial division. How do you convince primary voters that you'd be the best nominee to take on President Trump and heal the racial divide in America? Senator Klobuchar, what do you say to those Trump voters who prioritize the economy over the president's bigotry? Senator Bennett, why are you the best candidate to heal the racial divide that exists in this country today, which has been stoked by the president's racist rhetoric? Secretary Castro, after the president's racist tweets attacking Baltimore and Congressman Elijah Cummings, what would you do for Baltimore and other cities that need help?
Okay. Let me tell you something about Paul. I'm even speechless. I don't even know what to say. So, one of the best things that you can do when you are asked a question is to first consider evaluating, or you first evaluate the premise of the question. You will lose any kind of a back and forth with anyone. And you learn this, but we attorneys, we know this in depositions, right? You'll lose a back and forth with someone if you accept their, because every question has a premise, establishes some kind of preconceived notion on the basis of which you are supposed to answer. If you accept that from somebody like Don Lemon, you're toast. Now, they're all giddily accepting it. But in fact, you know, my take on this, too, is that Don Lemon and CNN are goading the Democrats into getting kookier and zanier and more far left. And they're stoking the racial divides that they, quote unquote, so strongly oppose and abhor. They're setting a trap for the Democrats. And it's almost unprecedented. You know, the conventional thinking, which you will not find on this program, the conventional thinking is, well, if the Republicans do their debates on Fox, it's friendly territory. If the Democrats do it on CNN, it's friendly territory. It's kind of a good thing. It's going to be a puff show that will help everybody. The problem is, it's the blind leading the blind. And the CNN moderators are so just violently anti-Trump. They're blinded. And to my point, and why this Google search was happening afterwards, and my gut, all of this together tells me that the one person on stage Tuesday night, no one on Wednesday, the one person that was saying, hey, guys, we got a problem. All the stuff that we're saying is going over people's heads. And if you don't react to the president's, Trump's various statements in an emotional way rather than in this, well, and not even emotional, but on a human level, in a real way, you're going to lose. And you're going to lose over and over again. The problem is bigger than Trump. So my takeaway from the debates was the crazy lady on stage was the one making the most sense. And that, you know, that against all the others and all the moderators, journalists from CNN included. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, yes, okay, Tulsi Gabbard, congresswoman from Hawaii, she got a dig at Kamala Harris. Tulsi Gabbard's the hot one. I want to put this in terms that you all can understand. She's very presentable, very, very attractive. She's a gal who served in the military, has that going for her. I would describe her as a moderate Democrat. But does she have what it takes to get across the finish line? I don't know. Too soon to tell. Here is what this is the attack that she lobbed at Senator Harris. Listen closely.
Now, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president. But I'm deeply concerned about this record. There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way. The bottom line is, Senator Harris, when you were in a position to make a difference and an impact in these people's lives, you did not. And worse yet, in the case of those who were on death row, innocent people, you actually blocked evidence from being revealed that would have freed them until you were forced to do so. There is no excuse for that. And the people who suffered under your reign as prosecutor, you owe them an apology.
This is Senator Harris's biggest vulnerability. And I'll tell you why, because let's just suppose for a minute that there is a Trump versus Harris contest in November of 2020. I can see it now. So the pitch will be by the African-American female candidate running against a white male racist Trump. What's the pitch going to be? The pitch is he's a racist. He's a bigot. He is destroying communities of color. And it's literally going to be so easy for Trump to simply say, hey, I've done more for the disproportionately incarcerated, entangled in a broken criminal justice system, communities of color, than you ever have. You were in a position of tremendous authority as the Attorney General of one of our biggest states in the union. And you did what? You put away a lot of poor people into jail for petty drug crimes? People that I now have had to, using the power of the presidency, make accommodations for? I can't do anything, of course, about state charges. He can't step into what's happened in California, but he can on a federal level and has very effectively and boldly been the first president to come along and to look at these just incredibly onerous, harsh sentences, people being sent away for 20, 25 years for minor drug offenses, which is insane. Send somebody's got a drug problem, you send them into prison, they come out 15 years later, let's say, and then what? Yeah, that person's going to integrate into society real well. Bang up job, guys. Well done. And it's because people in both parties, Republicans and Democrats, they do this tough on crime thing. It's, we're going to be tough on crime. I get it, by the way. I understand. We want to be tough on crime. And then they all want to outdo each other. And this is why no prior president could tackle it, because no prior president wanted to take the heat for letting people out of prison. You know, Obama, for all of his BS rhetoric, he didn't want to touch it with the 10-foot pole. Neither did Bush. Neither did Clinton. So you had Republicans, Democrats, popular presidents with a lot of clout didn't want to touch it, because why? They were all political weenies. And this here is a vulnerability, not just on this, not, I don't want to say just, it's not a vulnerability on some who's the bigger racist. You don't want to accept that premise. It shows that Kamala Harris is a political opportunist. It shows that Trump, as a Republican, is willing to take heat from conservatives within his own party to do the right thing, while she, as a Democrat, wanting to prove her bona fides in a state that still has fairly conservative leanings on this topic, right? We in California here do not like the idea. Even libs don't like the idea of released prisoners roaming in their bedroom communities. Don't like the idea of drug crime. Don't like the idea of being unsafe, although we'll talk more about that vis-a-vis Baltimore and Elijah Cummings. But we don't like that. And so she pandered. And everything that she says about wanting to help people of color and help the poor is all nonsense. And it will be her death and destruction. So what Tulsi Gabbard here lobbed at Kamala Harris was well deserved and goes right at her most significant Achilles heel, especially in a matchup with Trump. All right, don't go anywhere. Yes, I am loving this Baltimore story. There was a development that we found out yesterday or the day before about right before Trump's. It's like the guy almost knows when things happen and then goes for the jugular. I'll tell you what that was. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski here, coming in hot. Elijah Cummings, the longtime congressman from Baltimore, apparently had his house broken into the day before Trump launched that tweet. Now, yesterday I had meetings up in L.A. I am safely, for those who don't know California, you got to realize we're a big state. And I live in a place called Orange County. And within Orange County, I live in a part of it that is, well, it's about as manicured and privately owned as you can get. There's a big company here that's owned by a very quiet billionaire. And basically, whatever he touches has to be homogenized. The grass is green. The cypress trees are trimmed. The stucco is perfect. It's a little sickening at times. But let me tell you, I am driving through. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to get flack for this. I drove through the ghetto yesterday. And everything that you hear about, that we hear about on the news, the photos that we see, the stuff that Trump is barking about here about Baltimore, I drove through it yesterday, and I don't know. My car does it come with an anti-plague button? That, you know, you've got the filter button, you got the air recirc button, but I'm driving along rows and rows of tents. A sidewalk that you probably wouldn't want to walk on without, you know, wearing galoshes or at least maybe a waiter, right? You'd want waiters, right? So you could, in case the poo sludge, you know, began rising and oozing up from it was horrible. And I didn't even walk it. I'm just driving by it. And this is, by the way, this is what San Francisco has become. I know this. As a kid, when I first went to San Francisco in the 80s, there were people shooting up heroin on Union Square. Then they got their acts together because even the libs realized, all right, we've been a little too bleeding heart. We've been a little too permissive. It's time to clean this mess up. And they cracked down. They empowered the police. Okay? They made certain ordinances. They took pride in maintaining the downtown area. And the result of it was that San Francisco, there was a renaissance, and San Francisco vastly improved. Enter this new age of hating the police, okay? Of police being racist, about us being maximally tolerant. And it is, I am telling you, every parent understands fundamentally what is going on in these cities. Your kids do something bad. What do? That's it. I'm cracking down. I'm taking away your iPad. You're grounded for a week, and then you're going to regain your privileges slowly. You're going to earn your privileges back. So what happens with your kids? Parents, what happens? Yeah, your kids are suddenly, you know, they're minding their P's and Q's. Oh, what a shock. You know, I'm going to crack down. I'm going to be tough on my kids, and they're going to respond. So, and then what happens? Uh-huh. Right. You say, wow, these kids are being so good. Everything's great. La-di-da. And then they do something stupid again. And then it goes downhill, and you got to crack down again. And we're on this cycle right now where liberals have just lost their minds and they've neutered the police. And I see both sides of this. I'm a civil libertarian. I think a lot of power and authority is given to police. Oftentimes it is misused. But the pendulum is swinging radically in the wrong direction. And these cities need a crackdown. And you allow people to, it all begins with allowing people to urinate in the street. It's what they do in New York. If you're homeless, you can take a dump right in the middle of Park Avenue. It don't matter. The police are told to leave you alone. Well, enough poopsicles, human or otherwise, are left on Park Avenue. Pretty soon, the area deteriorates. Everything deteriorates. And little crime leads to bigger crime, leads to big, big crime, like murder and violent assaults. This is a known fact. So I'm driving through L.A., and it brings to mind this entire thing with Elijah Cummings. Because this is such a joke, and calling, and I know we talked about this last week, but calling Trump's tweets about this racist is the biggest absurdity, and it's going to blow up in the left's face. So the morning before Trump sends the tweet, apparently Congressman Cummings' home had been burglarized. Well, this is funny because, of course, it lends to the idea, right, that Baltimore is crime infested, so crime infested, in fact, that even a congressman's home isn't safe. This news, however, I think only provoked the leftists to dig their heels in even more, and it's produced an embarrassing result. I will tell you about that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Do you know who April Ryan is? Good. I don't really either. I see her once in a while. She's on CNN. And she's... a leftist hack, but a journalist, right? She's a journalist. And here is her, this is on Sunday. She is just not happy with Trump, and she actually admits in this statement that she's taken her journalism hat off, her reporter hat. This is comedic gold. Listen.
For him to use the word, and I'm not, Victor, just bear with me for a minute, to talk about infested. Mr. President, where's your urban renewal plan for Baltimore and cities like Baltimore? Don't talk about it, be about it, okay? This is now the reporter hat's off, because this is ridiculous. Now, if you really want to get into the history of the word infested, let's talk about the word infested when it was used against our Jewish brothers and sisters during the Holocaust. There are awful references that this president is making, and it needs to stop.
It needs to stop. Infested is code for, I don't know, I guess it's a racist word. It's or anti-Semitic word, or basically a word of hate. Embarrassingly enough, after this nonsense was put out there, a clip was dug up of Elijah Cummings himself saying this.
This morning, I left my community of Baltimore, a drug-infested area, where a lot of the drugs that we're talking about today have already taken the lives of so many children. The same children that I watched 14 or 15 years ago as they grew up, now walking around like zombies. This is only 40 miles away from here.
Okay. What's good for the goose is apparently not good for the gander. It's such a reach. And this, my friends, is all, these are symptoms of Trump derangement syndrome. Yeah, these are symptoms of what happens when you come up with a theory or conclusion and then must work backwards to make all the facts fit. The Democrats and their media cohorts have got it into their minds that Trump is a racist, bigoted freak, that he's a despicable person. Find that. And now that is their controlling premise. And Democrats don't work by collecting facts and then reaching a conclusion. If they did that, they'd be conservatives. So what they do instead is they start with their conclusion, which is always based on emotion. It's always based on their feelings. It's always based on their sentiment, which can come and go at a moment's notice. But at any rate, working back, they have to find the evidence of Trump being racist, and they have to take huge stretches. And they look at the tweet. They go, well, how is this thing racist? Infested. He used the word infested. it's comedy. And these are the rantings of a people that are all on the elevator down. And I tell you, No question about that. All right, don't go anywhere. More to come here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Stay tuned.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Marjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
All right, here it is. Just up now on Yahoo News. I guess the story came out yesterday, but it was put up on Drudge now. And I'm looking at it, and the piece on Yahoo by Mark Burns, who is an editor over there, is titled this, Is It Time to Take Marianne Williamson Seriously? Okay. See what I'm saying? Now, this is one of those stupid Yahoo News stories that is written for people with short attention spans. So it has these series of headings, and it's a kind of a the way the story's done is it's a conglomerate of various perspectives from other journalists. So really, it's like refried beans. The beans weren't good to begin with. Now they've been refried and served up. But let me read to you some of the headings that I think are relevant. This is in the perspective section in the piece. Williamson's sincerity helps her connect with voters in a way career politicians don't. Amen. Exactly. Now, the other part, there's a beneath the spiritual jargon. And yeah, she's kind of I told you, she's a new age kind of lifestyle guru. She's done some things with a number of celebrities. I don't get it. Not my bag of tricks. But at any rate, here's what the heading says. Quote, beneath the spiritual jargon, there's a truth to her message. Yeah, agreed. Also, the other part is this is other candidates could learn from her earnestness. Yeah, all of this is true. And the better. Yeah, I think she's going to get traction. I think she will take energy away or voters away from other candidates who, well, some probably don't deserve to be on the stage at all. Others might. The tricky thing in the Democratic primary, and let me say this because part of this is a numbers thing and a political strategy thing. In the primary right now, the most active voters, not the superdelegates, but the voters, people on the ground, the folks that are going to come out in the caucuses, in Iowa and elsewhere, and the primaries, these are people who are, I would describe generally, more kooky leftist, right? They're the further stretch of left. And that's why, Bernie ran on this same platform. It's not like Bernie's saying anything different today than he was 4 years ago. 4 years ago, he said all the same thing, Medicare for all, single payer, higher taxes. Blah, blah, blah. So this socialism, a democratic socialist platform was around 4 years ago and got a lot of traction in the primaries. And undoubtedly, were it not for the superdelegates, Bernie Sanders would have become the Democratic nominee. So to my point, it's these people that are making that are king making. A candidate like Williamson, my suspicion is, I don't know what her economic plan is. She probably doesn't even know how to balance a checkbook. But I think she's probably the kind of person that is a little bit more moderate. And so she is going, and she's more reasonable about some of these positions that she takes. I could see her taking votes from more moderate Democrats, re-Democrats who actually would have a chance against Trump. So if you want Trump to win, I think this is good news. And I think it will ultimately create, if she surges at this point, and knocks off a few of the other kind of reasonable but no-name candidates off that could get traction later, knocks them out of the running, we're going to end up with certainly a left-of-center Democratic nominee. And that is something I don't think the country as a whole is going to buy. So just, you know, a little bit of observation and strategy for you on this. Speaking of left, by the way, this is, I'll tell you, I think even people at CNN agree on this. John King here, after the first debate, said this about the field of candidates.
What Senator Sanders was just describing, what Senator Warren is describing, has not happened in our lifetime. That a Democrat can run in a national election to be for Medicare for all, for free college tuition, maybe for reparations, for giving health care to undocumented immigrants, a host of liberal proposals, way to the left of the last Democrat who won, Barack Obama, way, 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 way left to Bill Clinton, the Democrat to win before that.
Exactly. It's a nut job platform. It is not going to work. And with Trump having the economy, the wind in his sails, it's just not going to happen. More on that when we come back. Sam Rejofsky here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years... men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Rarely wrong and always, always right. I have an observation right now that I want to share with you and close out the program with this, because well, about a week ago, shortly after we did last week's program, a blurb came up about Trump losing suburban women. Now, he was knee-deep in this tit-for-tat with Elijah Cummings and supposedly making racist statements about Baltimore. And I got, you know, I saw that article, I read it, I get it. I saw also the a series of interviews that were being done with Iowans who were supporters of Trump saying, oh, he just needs to lay off the tweets. I like him generally, but I got to get him to stop tweeting. So even Heartland, you know, supposedly devout Trumpist out there saying that the president needs to tone it down. And I had a number of people come to me over this past week and express a certain amount of despair, saying Trump is losing it, man. He's just going off the rails. It's what, you know, the hang ringing where this is his race to lose and he's doing it. The idiot. And I have two things to say to this. The economy is roaring. It really is. Now, the stock market's one thing. And I think you'll notice that this doesn't generally mean anything to most of us, right? But the Federal Reserve dropped the interest rates, probably because Trump was berating them to do so. Generally speaking, if the Fed raises rates, it's to cool the economy down. It's like a brake on the economy. And if they lower rates, making money a little bit cheaper, easing, making money more available, making it easier for companies to borrow and consumers to borrow, that generally heats the economy back up. So we've got this new release of momentum in the economy, but it's about, at the end of the day, it's about employment. Are voters out there, whether it's in California, in Iowa, in Florida, wherever, are voters better off now than they were 4 years ago? Come November, when people are voting, are they better off than they were before Trump was president? And the answer is yes. And the other thing I have to add to that is even people who are middle of the road and think Trump is a tool and are not necessarily really politically active and you know, haven't been absolutely taken over by the Trump derangement syndrome, frothing at the mouth leftists, right? Those people, they may not like Trump. They may talk about how much they don't like Trump. They may even tell pollsters over and over again, I'm never going to vote for him. But when they go into the ballot box and they have a choice between kind of an untested nut job, perhaps left-wing Democrat who's talking about making some big moves that would affect the economy, and Trump, they're going to go with the devil they know. This happens over and over again. So the greatest indicator to me of what happens in November is what the economy is doing. And everything else doesn't matter. I don't care how many articles I read about suburban women being pissed off about Trump and what he tweets. But I also want to add this. If you didn't watch the rally in Cincinnati, it's okay. You didn't miss much. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean, it wasn't that great. I personally wasn't that entertained by it. It was good. It was good. Don't get me wrong. But Trump moderated himself. He did. No, he did. He didn't name anybody really by name. He didn't name anybody by name. He didn't say AOC once. He mentioned them, you know, the four crazy Democrats that are running the Democratic Party. He did all of that. It was all good. It was really good. And there's nothing really that came out of the rally last night that was controversial. To me, this signals a pivot. And this happened. Do you remember during the election in 2016 when Trump attacked the Gold Star family that was up there at the Democratic convention? He just went after them, and it was tone deaf. At the time, I said, this is just going too far. Shut up. Just let it be. And he didn't, and then he did, and then he pivoted and soared afterwards. These things are not decided in a week's news cycle, okay? And Trump is still very much learning on the job as a politician and as a public performer. And he is a guy who is capable of adjusting his message. He tests things. He pushes the envelope, sees what works. I'm telling you this about Trump. He's just getting warmed up. And the Democrats, I look at those buffoons that were up there Tuesday and Wednesday night. None of them have a hope or a prayer. As long as the economy is good, they're up against an opponent. They all think he's stupid. They all think he's a bigoted racist. They all think he's out of his mind. And they don't realize that he's not a racist. And more importantly, he's a thinker, and he's a tactical person. And if they continue to underestimate him, they will meet the same fate that Hillary Clinton did in 2016. So we will keep on top of all of this. No, don't you worry. Today, I'm sorry, we're doing a quicker program as I have some things I desperately need to get to. But it has been wonderful to be here, and I will be back next week together with producer Robbie and Dr. Audio. Have a great weekend. Love you all, and thank you for being part of this program. We'll be right back.